I'm Celeste Headlee, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Michelle Martin is away, and it's time for our weekly visit to the barbershop, where the guys talk about what's in the news and what's on their minds. Sitting in the chairs for a shape-up this week, writer and culture critic Jimmy Israel, civil rights attorney Arsalan Iftikhar, and Lenny McAllister, a contributor to the Chicago Defender and a Republican strategist. They're all with me here in Washington, and joining us from Miami, we have Fernando Vila. He's the managing editor of Univision News in English. So take it away, Jimmy.
Thanks. Headlee, you back.
I am.
Thanks so
nice
much.
Nice to be here.
It's good to see you again.
Nice to see you too.
Fellas, welcome to the shop. How are we doing?
Hey,
doing well.
Hey.
How you doing, man?
What's up, Jimmy?
Making it work, brother. Making it work. Well, let's like get that. Started talking with, talking about, I don't know, maybe the VP debates last night starring Joe Biden, Uncle Joe, and Paul Ryan. The two faced off in Danville, Kentucky last night, and they were ready to rumble. My friend, Celeste. We got some tape, yeah?
Yes, my friend, we do. While Vice President Joe Biden kept the punches coming, Congressman Paul Ryan got some hard hits in as well. Biden brought up Mitt Romney's comments about 47% of Americans not taking responsibility for themselves, and here's how Ryan responded.
I think the Vice President very well knows that sometimes the words don't come out of your mouth the right way.
But I always say what I mean. And so does Romney. Everybody's.
And we have another clip here. It features what arguably became the word of the night, malarkey. Here is Vice President Biden responding to Congressman Ryan's statements about Iran policy.
This is a bunch of stuff. Look, here's the deal.
What does that mean, a bunch of stuff?
Well, it means it's simply inaccurate.
It's Irish.
It is. We Irish call it malarkey.
Thanks for the translation.
No, okay. We Irish call it malarkey.
Oh, nice. Thanks for that, Celeste. You know, malarkey is now trending on Twitter, but that's really as it always is, quietly. But anyway, you know, I thought it was interesting. You know, I love Uncle Joe. You know, and this is what he does best. He's that guy. Really, to my mind, when I watched the debates, this was like, you know, this debate is going on at every bar, every barbershop, you know, every poker game. Everywhere, and it's these two guys, and with more alcohol, I'm sure. But what I'm getting at is, you know, this style of debate is what people were kind of expecting to see the first time around. Which, in my mind, in some ways, is sad because I think we've kind of reduced ourselves to expecting like a reality show way of engagement. You know, where if you have a problem, I have a problem with you, out come the champagne bottles, or I'm going to start snapping on your mama at any minute now. Arsalan Iftikhar.
Yes, sir.
You know, you're the Obama supporter in the House. You're the tankster.
Okay.
did jolting Joe Biden, did he score a knockout?
He did. You know, I think for many of us Obama supporters, before the debate, you know, we were kind of looking at Vice President Biden and saying, you know, we need you here. Please don't screw this one up. You know, we're already behind in the game. And I think he showed up. I think he brought his A game. You know, he was able to go toe-to-toe with Paul Ryan. You know, he essentially brought his foreign policy chops, you know, as chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. He was able to bring, you know, the 47% talking point and other important points that, you know, President Obama wasn't able to bring in the first debate. Whatever, you know, Joe Biden was eating last night, they need to put that on the plate of President Obama's stat. And, I think it was a net positive for Democrats.
Listen, you know, when you're president, you got to be presidential. You know, cut Obama some slack. You know, like I said, it's not Real Housewives. This is politics, homie.
Yeah, but politics is a full contact sport. And, you know, as we saw last night, you know, I think both Biden and Paul Ryan stood their ground. You know, obviously, I think that, you know, Paul Ryan, you know, got away with a few untruths, you know, talking about the attack in Libya and saying how the president didn't call it an act of terrorism when actually the next day on September 12th in the Rose Garden, President Obama called it an act of terrorism.
Lenny McAllister, did Power Paul Ryan, did he do you proud, brother?
He did the job he was supposed to do. And I think that his job was to hold serve. His job was to make sure that the momentum that Mitt Romney garnered last week on Wednesday, he was able to hand back over to Governor Romney for Tuesday. He did that job very well. well. Vice President Biden had a different role to fill. He had to close the enthusiasm gap, and I think he did that for Democrats. But when it came to some of the things that needed to be taken off the table that the Obama-Biden ticket likes to brag about, for example, pulling troops out of Iraq, I think that the congressman did a great job of saying, we didn't pull these troops out of Iraq because this was the direction. It was because Vice President Biden was supposed to go in there and broker some negotiations that he failed at securing. So he was able to take that off the table to some undecided voters and remind them of the circumstances around the pullout. I think as well, he was able to pin down Vice President Biden on the Benghazi situation where he said, well, they didn't ask for more security. I think everybody is starting to see now that you're having a lot of inconsistencies coming out from this administration. He was able to pin them down on that. He did enough to hand that momentum back over to Mitt Romney for Tuesday. Now it really is up to President Obama to try to take the enthusiasm gap that is closed for Democrats and actually perform Tuesday night.
Wait a second. Hold on. Let's cut to the chase, because you were a big critic of the way Obama handled the first debate. You know, your boy Ryan, he looked like somebody stole his bike. I mean,
but Paul Ryan, that is who he is. He's a policy wonk.
Really?
He's a policy wonk. He has been in Washington his whole life, and he is a numbers guy. So he is who he was. And for the Tea Party and fiscal conservatives, that's exactly who they expected to show up. People expected the president to show up like he did in 2008 as Senator Obama. And I've said this previously. If President Obama from last Wednesday shows up on Tuesday instead of Senator Obama from 2008, Mr. Obama is going to be moving back to Chicago in January.
Right, right. There's a Republican. We heard Arshalon, the Democrat, but we do have a kind of objective voice in the room, right, Jimmy?
We got Fernando.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fernando, what do you think?
Fernando Vila. The polls seem to have split decision on this round. What's your take?
I do think it was sort of a net positive for Biden and the Democrats, although it was by no means a knockout blow. I think it was sort of a strong body punch. I love these sort of political political speak, pundit speak, right? But I do think that Biden was effectively able to put Paul Ryan on shaky ground, especially when he got him to admit that he requested for stimulus funds for his own district.
Right.
When he exposed the sort of big hole in the Romney Ryan tax plan and how they're actually going to fund it. I do think that, however, he was on shaky ground in the whole Libya thing. I think that's shaky ground for the administration in general. However, I do think it was a net positive for Biden and the Democrats. I do agree that they closed the enthusiasm gap a little bit. They definitely stemmed the bleeding, but it was by no means a decisive turn in the campaign. A
lot of shaky ground going on, Mr.
A lot of shaky ground.
Hold on. If you're just joining us, this is Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm Celeste Headlee, and obviously you are listening to the weekly Barbershop Roundtable. We're joined by writer Jimmy Israel, civil rights attorney Arsalan Iftikhar, Republican strategist Lenny McAllister, and Univision journalist Fernando Vila. Back to you, Jimmy. Before we leave the vice presidential debates.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a whole lot of shaking going on. But
that's right. We got to talk about the photos that Time Magazine posted.
Mr. P90X.
I feel comfortable bringing this up. But yeah, he's a big P90X fanatic. That's what he's – well – he looks very, very fit. He was in workout gear. He was curling, right? He was showing off his muscles. Jimmy, what do you think? I mean, there are some people who think that Ryan's looks actually are a real net benefit for the ticket. Do you think it works for voters?
No. I mean, just because you're holding the dumbbell, that makes you a tough guy. I don't know. I think it really.
He doesn't sway people.
No, and I don't think he looked very. That isn't the guy. The guy with the hat turned back and the dumbbell. That isn't the guy I want getting the call in the 2 a.m. call. You know what I mean? If the president's not available, that's not the guy. That's not the guy I want.
But come on. I mean, yes. That's you see a different side of him. But let's be real. How did President Obama gain his momentum 5 years ago? Obama girl, I'm in love with Obama.
He didn't have
a girl
to do
that
with
had
that.
A crush on.
But Obama girl's not a candidate.
But it hit. Tens of millions of hits, and it made somebody with a funny name going against a former first lady all of a sudden get this name cachet that he was able to ride and then use his policies to come into play.
Okay.
So that could be something it could be leveraged.
He wasn't dancing with Obama, girl.
That's Lenny McAllister. He's always the strategist, right?
Although
okay,
I,
but
I
Arsalan, let's, hey, okay. Paul Ryan, good-looking guy. We can all agree on that. But Arsalan, I want to take you the other side, because Politico has reported, I don't know if you've seen this, that Joe Biden is a bit of a sex sex symbol for some senior women. What do you think? Maybe looks count in his side.
Well, you know, I do think that looks do play a factor. And I'm reminded of the VP debate last night, you know, watching it on CNN. They had the men and women emoticon, you know, graphs on the bottom. Mm-hmm. And every time Paul Ryan spoke, the women spiked to the top while the men kind of stayed, you know, flatlined in the middle. You know, I do think that, you know, the whole Time magazine spread with him, you know, flexing like he was the situation from Jersey Shore was kind of redonkulous. But,
yes.
You know, I think that, you know, at the end of the day, you know, looks do matter. I mean, let's go back to, you know, Kennedy and Nixon. You know, one of the reasons that people said that Kennedy was, you know, more of an attractive candidate than Nixon was. And so I think that that's going to play a role as well.
All right, let's get you in here, Fernando Vila, because I'm sure you've heard that age-old truism that Washington is Hollywood for ugly people. So often we identify the entertainment industry with Democrats. Maybe Paul Ryan adds a little glamour to the grand old party. What do you think?
Well, I mean, maybe I don't know. I think the pictures were kind of strange. I mean, I think that it looks like they were pulled out, straight out of the Paul Ryan Gosling fake Twitter account. You know, like, hey girl, come look at me or something. And you know, just the picture of him pointing at the camera was just so funny to me. I mean, he looked like a frat boy.
Yeah,
I don't know who he really looked like. He looked like Uncle Rico from Napoleon Dynamite.
Oh,
he's flexing for the camera.
Oh, come on! All right, enough of that.
All right, yeah. All right,
let's move on.
Let's keep it moving. So, you know, we go from the political stage to like the gym stage to the real theater. For those of you that aren't theater buffs like myself, it's the 30-year anniversary of playwright David Mamet's first time he put Glengarry Glen Ross on the stage. Now, it's a study of men trying to earn their manhood in a commission in a real estate office. The play, which was later turned into a movie, tells the story, like I said, of real estate agents. And we got a clip from starring Jack Lemmon, Al Pacino, and Alec Baldwin. Can we drop it?
As we're adding a little something to this month's sales contest, as you all know, first prize is a Cadillac Eldorado. Anybody want to see second prize? Second prize is a set of steak knives. Third prize is your fight.
No, you gotta hate when that happens. I've totally gotten that speech. But anyway, there is a revival of Glengarry Glen Ross, and it's about to kick off in New York City, and it's running at the La Jolla Playhouse on the West Coast as well, I believe. So it's one of my favorites. I think it's a study of not just human nature, but this is also kind of the postmodern reemergence of the angry white male. You know, this isn't a study of manhood so much as it is a study in white manhood, to my mind. You know, because the following year we had Michael Douglas in Falling Down, which is another great study in modern white male manhood anger. And I think Glengarry Glen Ross it precedes Falling Down, but I think it's really important, more so than Falling Down, and not just because I'm a David Mamet fan. But Lenny McAllister, you know, the play is set in Chicago.
Yeah.
And which is also your hometown.
Yeah.
Do you think the play's themes they're relevant today?
Yeah, I do, because I think that it goes back to the level of what people will do to prove their manhood, including and especially setting aside their ethics and allowing their definition of manhood to be tied to economic success. And I think that particularly in these economic times, there's a tendency for those that are still trying to save their identity as far as being American middle class. There's more of a tendency to buy it and sell it in there and be defined as a, you know, as a price tag, as your job, as your title, and not be one of the folks sliding underneath that 15% of the poverty line. I think one of the things that when we talk about these economic times, we're not talking about the esteem recession that we're having here. Mm-hmm. And I think that this play in this movie talks to how these type of behaviors play into the results that we're seeing even today. Mm. So I think in some regards, it's even more relevant. And I think it's a cautionary tale as far as how we treat each other and how we're going to climb out of this situation. Because if we're creating these huge winners and losers with these big of stakes, you're bound to have the social dysfunction that we continue to have in America.
Okay. Fernando Vila? I know you weren't born when the play first debuted, man. That's not a dig, but I understand that you've seen the movie. What do you think? What prompted you to watch it?
The iconic Alec Baldwin scene, obviously, is what drew me in the first place. But I think it works really effectively today as sort of a broad critique on the American dream. Really, I mean, it's sort of the American dream of owning a house and owning property, right? And this sort of kind of pulls the curtain back to see like sort of the ugly side behind it and the sort of despair that drives that engine, right? The selling of hot air. I mean, these people know that they're selling, you know, essentially nothing to their
dreams.
To their clients,
mm-hmm.
and they're selling hopes and dreams that are back to nothing. And sort of in the wake of the Great Recession and the housing crisis, I mean, I think that really really resonates today. And then obviously Alec Baldwin is like unbelievable in it. It's just like stealing a show, mm-hmm. stealing a movie like unlike anyone has done, I think, ever.
And not for nothing, Mamet tacked that Alec Baldwin scene on for the film. It's not actually in the
right.
in the play. Arsalan.
Yeah, you know, for me, I'm always reminded of Death of a Salesman, right? And so to me, this was sort of like a 1990s, you know, version of Death of a Salesman in that, you know, it just showed, and I think in a very poignant way, especially with Alec Baldwin's monologue, you know, how American individualism, you know, essentially gets crushed under the weight of, you know, corporate greed. You know, he said that, you know, first prize is a Cadillac Eldorado, second mm-hmm. prize is steak knives, third prize is you're fired. You know, I think what it shows about the American dream is that it's a financial dream. It's not an ethical one. Mm-hmm. You know, it's one where, you know, if you have the white picket fence house, if you have the 2.56 children, you know, if you're driving the Honda Accord and the Toyota Sienna, that means that you've made it to the American dream. And I think that reality is one that's pretty jarring for a lot of Americans.
I think the critical difference between those two works is that Glengarry Glen Ross is really about how these men are relating to each other versus Death of a Salesman is how this man functions in a family. In a family setting, and what other people mean to him.
It goes back to the a manhood's own identity, whether it's within his family unit, whether it's within a greater social circle.
And if I can jump in here as a female watching this movie, it's actually very enlightening to see that this is the way that this is part of the environment in which men kind of live their lives. So it's educational for women as well. Anyway, Jimmy Israel, writer and culture critic, he's also adjunct professor of film and social media at Cuyahoga Community College. Arsalan Iftikhar is a civil rights attorney and founder of themuslimguy.com. Lenny McAllister, Republican strategist and contributor for the Chicago Defender, and Fernando Vila, managing editor of Univision News in English. He joined us from member station WLRN in Miami. Jimmy, Arsalan, Lenny, here with me in our Washington, D.C. studio. Thank you all so much.
Peace.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
Yep, yep.
If you can't get enough Barbershop Buzz on the radio, look for our new Barbershop podcast. It's in the iTunes store or at npr.org. That's our program for today. I'm Celeste Headlee. This is Tell Me More from NPR News. Michelle will be back to talk more on Monday.